sexy, spooky bones.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Johnny.
And welcome to the show.
Yay. We're going to review a movie that has a much different premise
than
the previous movie. Yeah. What did I text you? You ready to review some Rosemary's Baby?
That's the twist. There's two babies.
It's two babies, yeah. And they changed her name twice.
And welcome to the show. This week we're reviewing Shelby Oak. As always, John will give us the plot in five words or your first thoughts and then go to a deep spoiler analysis. But John, we just completed our Michelle Suave look back Italian giallo retrospective. Homemade giallo. And you can catch all those past episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. I know you're super excited to talk about this movie, and I cannot wait to hear your plot summary in five words for Shelby Oak.
Johnny.
Five words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
Window demon's a dog person.
That's just accurate.
Okay. Coming in at number two for Shelby Oak's story of the Forever Bangs. You know, so one of her main actresses has bangs, disappears for 12 years, and has the same exact haircut. Coming in at number one for Shelby Oak's sister needs documentary to search.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, why now? I was like, oh, now that you're being recorded, you're gonna go look for your sister?
Yeah. So, Shelby Oak, it is, we should always start with the beginning of this, right? That this is written and directed by Chris Stuckman, YouTube movie reviewer. Were you familiar with him at all? Yeah. Or?
No.
I have seen a handful of his stuff. And you know what? I generally like a lot of his reviews. They're not bad. I don't always agree with what he said, but that doesn't necessarily mean that weighs less in terms of whether or not I like him or not, right? It's more just like how he presents his show and how he does the reviews and what things that he articulates that he likes and dislikes.
Okay, but how do you feel about him when asked what his four favorite movies were? He said Collateral, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Drive, and Signs.
He definitely grew up in a certain era. So
I think he was born in 88.
Yes. So Drive would have had a big influence on him because stylistically.
And he said his love for movies started when he watched Signs.
Interesting.
Maybe he's a latchkey kid, right?
You know.
What is it, latchkey kid?
Signs. I think Signs gets a lot of shit. Is it a great movie? No.
No.
Is it, in retrospect, is it?
It's a movie.
It's a movie.
It's true.
I remember that movie was a crowd-pleasing, fun summer event, and I think that's maybe what he most connects with. At the time, like, I mean, all of M. Night's
things
movies,
going for it, yeah.
All of those M. Night movies were like huge, and this was like
popcorn flicks.
Yeah, this was like right after I believe Unbreakable, which was a giant hit, right? Because I feel like he did The Sixth Sense.
Did The Village come out after?
The Village did Science? Come after, and then Lady in the Water, and then we're just like we lost the plot. But but yes, he. I think he did. This was the third movie by him, and at this point, he was batting 1,000. M. Night Shyamalan, from what I remember, like he's like The Sixth Sense. He did Unbreakable, and then he did Signs. And Signs was like, I don't think people remember this, but categorized M. Night as like the next Spielberg. And then he was taking on Aliens, which was like not a huge thing, but you know, like some of the more famous Spielberg movies have aliens in it, but E.T., Close Encounters, War of the Worlds,
even Super 8, stuff like that.
Like he's always kind of had like that wonder. Even Amblin, where like little like aliens and stuff like that were part of it. So a lot of people were making those parallels. So the high.
It also had one of the first viral things, right? Where not everybody had seen the movie, and so they hadn't seen that the found footage segment where the alien walks across the back in Mexico or whatever.
Widely considered one of the scariest moments in a movie. It's literally just the creature walking across the street. Yeah.
But it's just,
but it worked.
No, it seems kind of corny, but
yeah, I know. But everybody screamed at the scene. Yeah. I remember that very vividly. everyone reacts very visceral.
I thought the scariest part of the movie for me was, I know this isn't a review on Signs, but the scariest part of the movie for me that it just like lives rent free in my head is they shut a door, like they walk in and then they close it behind them, right? And not like, so they push the door open, walk through, and then close it behind them and proceed to board it up. And I remember Joaquin Phoenix is like, clearly it's a rubber hammer. He's like missing the nails. But I couldn't get over like, they just have to open the door. I forgot what direction, but the aliens literally just got to open the door and then push the boards off. Mm-hmm. Like I wasn't going to prevent them from opening the door. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is the movie logic was really bad. I think I explained that poorly. It'd be like
that was the most frightening scene for you.
Yes, I was like, they're gonna die because
they're stupid.
They don't understand how doors work.
Yeah. Well, that says a lot about you. That says a lot about your psyche, John. This is a real good.
Yeah, it's like
dive.
The aliens could literally just crawl underneath the boards. What are they doing? They need to get out.
They did
here.
Have trouble with doors.
Oh, that's true.
Much like your character in our 24-hour short film.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That in the aliens went to a planet full of water, but the other theory is they're demons and the water was blessed all over the house because this little girl would bless her water and then leave it all over the place.
No, dude, that, I don't know what.
You never heard that theory that it was like demons, not aliens?
No, dude, it's 100% alien.
And they came to a planet that's like 70% water.
Yeah, not all aliens are going to be smart.
Dumb in that movie.
District 9 heard that, right?
Everybody's dumb in the movie. Yeah.
No, but I mean, I think it's very strong in like capturing faith and coincidence and redemption. And like, I think it covers a lot of those topics very about as mainstream as you can. There's like hope in this movie, which is what you need in these summer blockbusters. A little bit of hope.
And I think this is a very long winded way of saying Shelby Oaks kind of sucks.
I know we've literally it's talked like 10 minutes movie. About
this. Yeah, like, because we don't want to talk about this movie. It's not good. I'm going to tell you that right now.
I think like, so we could say this movie's like, we could literally split this movie into two halves, right? The sort of like mockumentary part, fake true crime documentary that's being made. And then whatever, I don't know if it's a spoiler or not, but like this is the second part of this movie. It's like, which
not a documentary,
which
anymore.
Is not. And it becomes
and
very,
it is a documentary
straightforward
again.
Horror film, which I think was pretty typical.
Yeah.
Like that's how I would divide it up.
Yeah.
I think.
But then remember at the end, it goes back to being a documentary and then it ends not being a documentary again. I'm like, God, what is this? Who the fuck?
I think most consensus is that people liked this first part of the movie and people didn't like the second part of the movie.
Yeah.
I actually am going to contrarian that and say, like, I didn't care for any of this documentary stuff. I didn't really care for any
of it. Yeah, I didn't think any of it was good, to be honest. It was
just small things. That there's a paranormal YouTube group, which is very like on the nose, coming from a YouTube guy talking about YouTube
was
channel.
It the paranormal paranoids, which I don't know why that pissed me off. I was like, what a stupid name for it, but whatever.
Yes, exactly. Like, there was a time in our pop culture, our shared culture, or whatever, that like the paranormal shows were huge. So I was not quite sure. So is this like from that era, like mid? Early 2000s era where like this stuff would like was more popular, more prevalent in our, you know, on TV and stuff. Couldn't tell you.
I guess so. From what I read, Stuckman conjured up this idea around 2015, 2016 about missing YouTubers. So maybe it was a little more popular back then. It kind of was, right? The Ghost Adventures and stuff like that.
Sure. Yeah. And I guess there is something to, you know, of that time when all this, well, this was kicking up at YouTube and it was like the Wild West, right? People were uploading whatever. It was like a bit of like people would show up, gain popularity, fall off and stuff. So there is a bit of, you know, truth to it. But as far as like the elements presented in this movie, like I just don't believe, like what threw me off literally from the opening of this movie, that there's all this like very typical, you see it in any movie. For whatever reason, it just rang not untrue to me, was when they're showing all of like news reels and news stuff and they're like, oh, the paranormal paranoids are missing. And oh, it's day 5 and they're missing in here and they haven't been seen. These are the name of the character. None of that rang true because it's like most news stories are like one cycle. Right? 1 to 2 cycles.
Yeah.
Like, why would they spend so much time on these missing YouTube people if YouTube wasn't even a thing. Like, why would they spend one more than one segment on these missing people? It made no sense. I don't know. That to me, that I get why that's there, and I get why you would do it that way, because that's how, you know, true crime shows work, right? You gather all this, like, you know, material from media, and you kind of splice it together and stuff. But to me, that just didn't ring. So immediately I was like, suspension of disbelief's like completely out the window. Because none of this whole part of it didn't work. And then we meet the sister, Maya, and there was an interesting part where she's like, oh, this is Riley. I want to introduce you to her. Or she said something along those lines. And I thought it was a great way to kind of like flesh out what the story was and talk about, you know, what's going on. And I thought that part worked.
Just sorry. She fucking says like, this is who... I know my younger sister, and it's her singing a song, the sister that went missing, about like, please, big sister, save me. I was like, I thought I was going to lose my eyesight because I was rolling my eyes so fucking hard. I was like, dude, my honest opinion of this entire film, and this is going to be really harsh, this movie belongs in that like $1 to $5 bin of fucking DVDs on Walmart.
So the good stuff. No.
Good stuff. Yeah.
No, I get you. I get you. I know what you're trying to say. Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you. I think there are once we kind of got past that like opening things and we kind of like meet Maya and we talk about certain things, I thought some of that stuff was like fine. It worked. Like it moved the story along, and like I'm kind of wanting to see where it goes next. And then, of course, there's that change in the middle, but I kind of almost wanted this whole movie just to be like, to feel like this episodic TV show, right? Like,
it should have, yeah.
True crime documentary.
Which was a movie that I hated on, but it was pretty good. That was kind of like that. I think I had a kind of a harsh criticism of it, but in retrospect, I was like, no, the movie's actually, I think I like it. Lake Mungo? Was that what it was called?
Yes, Lake Mungo. Exactly. That's also a movie that is commonly feel like it borrowed from, was... a reference to Mungo, which is a masterpiece, I think, you know. To me, it's one of the best movies made, and found footage, or just like in horror movies in general, it's very underappreciated cult film. But yes, it almost feels like it should have been like Mungo, right? Like just this document of like this missing of this, you know, sister looking for her younger sister.
And they find the tape or whatever, right? Like not
right. Like, yeah.
But you gotta have the sister go off by herself and then run into the French teacher. What's her name? Something
Bartlett. Oh, we're getting ahead. Yeah, we're getting ahead. Like Mia is convinced that because there's like new clues showing up, like there's an abandoned prison, we kind of get a face now, we get a name. There's like strange deaths, there's like all these things. So at that
Keith David,
well, then the film shifts from documentary to traditional narrative horror. And I think this is clearly the dividing line. And I think I have to give credit to Chris Stuckman for attempting this, because it is rather bold decision to switch your film from a found footage movie like to a you know, typical traditional narrative horror film. And people are either going to like it or not like it. It didn't work for me.
But you know what movie did that before this movie and was excellent? Late Night with the Devil.
Okay, yeah, that spliced both pretty seamlessly, yeah. Especially because it had that real-time thing of like all taking place within one episode, quote-unquote one episode of the show.
Yes.
Yeah. I think I see your point. It's not exactly that. I would say a one-to-one.
No.
But I get your sentiment. Yeah, like there is a way to do this where you can present like TV episodes or like episodic footage or whatever, and then like splice in like things that are actually happening now.
Because what I think made Late Night with the Devil work was when it became clearly not document, or the found footage would be stuff that you wouldn't be able to catch on camera. And this is all like, I don't, yeah, anyway, so it turns into like a regular movie, so they can get Keith David in on all his cinema glory, and Robin Bartlett too.
I kind of feel like, I don't know how to describe this without being harshly critical, but I did not like that there was this hashtag throughout the movie, like, what happened to Riley? But it seems like premeditated. And the way it was delivered felt so like on the nose that you just felt like he thought, oh, this is a clever idea and a clever way to promote my movie whenever it does come out. Like, I can use this hashtag. Like, where is you know, what is, where is Riley or whatever the heck it was. It was just, it seemed very kind of icky from like a writer's point of view. Not that I consider myself a writer. I can write, I have thoughts. but it just seemed a little like too clever for its own good, and it just kind of gave me ick, because I just don't think that it just seemed premeditated too much, like too clever. You're being too clever.
I mean, that there's an argument for a lot of that in the film, like this. So Shelby Oaks is a ghost town,
which is not explored,
and the only inkling you get of it being a ghost town is a photo
and some footage.
We're in Shelby Oaks, but it's like, you're not seeing the town at all.
Which was a missed opportunity, because like, we almost feel like that should have been more in the front of this movie, that idea of a ghost town. Only because like, I've actually, I don't know if you have, John, driven through an empty town before. Famously, the one in New Mexico. And like, I've driven through it in the middle of the night, and it's terrifying. There's like nothing there.
It's fucking scary.
Really scary. And I don't even know. I've driven through it several times, and it makes you curious. Like, why did these people leave? Well, you know, it's just, there's a lot of things you can mine out from that, right? Like a town, there's like a town not being present. Like, he didn't even spend 5 minutes on this thought or idea.
No.
Even though his movie's called Shelby Oak.
Yeah. It's, because the movie ends with a specific house in Shelby Oaks, but it looks like this house is in the middle of the forest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, exactly.
Just, I don't know.
Yeah, it was a missed opportunity, because you literally could have done anything with that. Done anything with that idea of a town being deserted or empty town. And I think they do a vague allusions to like something happening, and then the town just died off or whatever.
Because ultimately it doesn't even matter that it's a ghost town,
right? It doesn't matter,
right?
Yeah. And it's in Dark County, Ohio.
It's and there's gonna be a couple of twists that just kind of infuriated me. I'm like, what was the point of all this setup? all right.
Okay, do you want to get into spoilers now?
Yes.
Wait. No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers. Robin Bartlett comes out. She's the French teacher from If Looks Could Kill.
Yeah, she plays Norma. Was it Norma or something?
Sure.
And, well, we should just say that this movie and the movie we just reviewed are similar, because...
Very similar. And I know we are very dismissive of The Sect, but in comparison, The Sect is quite the fun ride. In comparison.
I don't know. I don't think I would go that far. I think these movies like are deeply, deeply flawed movies. But it's funny that they have very similar story plots involved in them. I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. At least in The Sect, you get like, there's something going on where they need this woman.
Right.
And in this one, it's like this sister decides to look for her sister again after 12 years because she's been looking for her. But I'm like, how are you barely getting to this point to find her in the town? I don't understand. Like,
yeah, he did try to like be like, oh, MySpace and like YouTube and but none of that stuff mattered. I mean, it didn't really add anything
because
to the
ultimately
plot.
What happened? Everything was premeditated since their birth. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yes, because there's a demon who's been demon entity manipulating all of these events from very early on. In their life.
Childhood,
basically. Yeah. And then Maya discovers Riley is still alive, being held captive for 12 years. She's imprisoned in a basement by the woman, Norma, which she's very creepily introduced. I was like, oh, okay, cool. She's holding her captive. Yeah. I figured. And then I saw was another woman, oh, okay, that's her son. Yeah, got it. The guy that's been haunting them is being manipulated or whatever by the demon.
Yeah, and then he's the guy that shoots himself right randomly. Yes. Like middle of the movie.
Yes.
Because he wants to be let go. Yeah, I was trying to understand that. There's this whole like, I'm just gonna skip right to the biggest twist is the sister looking for her sister was also right since very early on being manipulated by this demon also. So why go through all the hoopla of finding her sister, taking her sister out of the basement, having the sister that was like held captive for 12 years run back and open up the door to let the demon people out? and run away. I didn't get any of it. I just started getting really annoyed that the movie kept going.
Of course that would probably be the biggest twist, is that Maya was kind of like also targeted, not only Riley. Because there's this one scene where I guess Riley was getting already kind of, haunted by the demon when she was younger.
Yeah.
And so I think she stayed one night with her, and then the glass breaks. There's like this cut to like the glass breaking in the window. And that was a signal to the demon thinking, oh, I can use this younger daughter for some reason for 12 years to...
Yeah.
Yeah. To basically like be a part of his plan or whatever. What's the end goal here? What is he just wants to have a baby?
Another Antichrist.
More Antichrist stuff, right? But less.
And using the older sister's like need to want to have a child, but never had the right time. And now there's a baby. So she's going to take care of
the child. Riley was just there to have the child. So yeah. That's, if you hadn't picked up on what we've been saying, that's very similar to what the sec is. It's another Antichrist movie similar to this movie. Or I don't know if this is Antichrist, maybe just a demon baby. I don't freaking know. It's either or.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It kind of don't
what
care enough.
Branch of sect is this? Shelby Oak. Is this the American sect?
These are the branch from Akron, Ohio.
Yeah. I don't know. It's funny how we picked two movies with very, very similar plots, but executed yeah. very differently, but kind of the same.
Very differently.
Because you had to have like...
Because this movie was not good. It switches into a regular movie, and then after all the stuff happens, and you think the demon people are dead, and the baby's still alive, and her sister's still alive...
Mm-hmm.
It switches back to a documentary only for the movie to end like a regular movie again.
Right. With the demon behind her, and then like she being possessed because there's like dogs and demons. They all have like this weird colored eye or something eyes.
Yeah. It's like the sister that was held captive tries to smother the baby, and the older sister goes and like, you can't do this. And I like replayed the section to see like, how did she get knocked through the window? And it doesn't make any sense.
Mm.
She like flies out the window and the demon dogs go and rip her apart.
Yeah.
As the older sister is weeping with the child and the demon from the window is hanging out behind her.
Yeah.
And that's Shelby Oaks.
I'm not object.
An ending that has nothing to do with Shelby Oaks again.
Yeah. I don't object to this sort of like false hope ending, you know, this little like twisty ending, but I don't really care for how we got here, like how we got to this point. And I just didn't think it was clever enough. And so I never truly, in the sense that I never truly believed or had any emotional stake in any of these characters' stories or relationships. So when we're...
I'm also going to say the past 5 years, we've also gotten, what was that Sydney Sweeney movie that was like a... lesser version of the Omen movie.
I don't,
you know, yes. What I mean. So we Immaculate. So we had like Immaculate, the Omen, the first,
which is great,
or whatever,
which is great.
Yeah, yeah, first one was fantastic, yeah. And all these movies are the same exact premise. So I don't understand why he would decide to make them what this is the movie was about. And I was like, oh man, just a big swing and a miss.
And execution, yes. I would say that, you know, I didn't think this was the worst looking I've ever seen. I mean, I thought it was.
It didn't look bad. It didn't
look bad. It has some decent actors in it.
Oh, man, that's the thing. It's like the actors are, like, I think doing the best that they can, and it is not their fault that the movie kind of just happens this way.
And I think also this is victim to, and I think...
Hubris. I'm
I think this movie is, this idea is very mined out, very, like, it's been done a million times. And then everyone's sort of, everybody, when they look at stuff like that, it's like, well, how can I twist it? How can I add something to it? And I don't think it worked. I don't think it worked enough.
No.
And for its twist and for the way he approached this story. So, all right.
I'm also going to say, like, I know this is a harsh criticism, but for being a film critic, you would hope for better.
Not necessarily. I think they're two very different skills. Being a filmmaker, being a film writer, don't necessarily go hand in hand, right?
But didn't he get this job solely because he is a famous film critic on YouTube?
Well, I wouldn't say he kickstarted it, so nobody was offering him, you know, work. But he sort of self, you know, published it. I think from what I understand, he's a guy who always wanted to be a filmmaker. I think he made a ton of shorts. I think what I believe is that he saw signs and then he just made like a bunch of stuff. So the film critic stuff just kind of happened because YouTube was going on and he thought he But I think he grew famous and his notoriety from becoming, you know, a YouTube film critic. But I think his idea is that he wanted to be a filmmaker. I mean, look at Roger Ebert. Roger Ebert wrote what? Beyond Valley of the Dolls. Is that a good movie? In my opinion, Roger Ebert is the greatest film critic to have ever lived. Is Beyond the Valley of the Dolls a great movie? No, it's not. I can tell you straight up. It's not that great. So, I mean, I don't know. You can make a lot of cases for that. There's a lot of film. I could think of a couple other film critics who also, you know, dip their toe into filmmaking. And a lot of the stuff is not very good. You know, Peter Bogdanovich was a film critic. He's made some amazing movies. You know, there's a couple other ones. But
I think, yeah, the Skeleton Boy has made
this very. This that correlation, you know, I think the guy, he followed his passion and did what he could and made a career and made the movie I believe he wanted to make. I'm imagining he wanted to make. But as he himself should know, as film critics, well, I don't know if we can call ourselves film critics. We are. But we have to look at it objectively and judge it for what it is, right? So in our opinion, it didn't work. So
no.
Okay, all right. Do you want to add to any of that or any other thoughts?
No.
Okay, let's just rate them. Let's rate the movie. Yeah.
I'm just going to keep saying bad things about it. So.
Fair. All right, John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give me? Sexy bones. Ooh, sexy bones. Well, I know what you're doing.
No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie. I'm gonna give Shelby Oaks. Did I give the sex?
4.
Okay. I'm gonna give Shelby Oaks 2 sexy spooky bones.
Interesting. I'm just gonna give it a 4, dude. I thought it was fine. I don't think these movies are better or worse than each other. It's hard for me to judge. Though I understand. I'll be honest with you. If you and I were drinking beers, you're throwing the sect, I would not object to watching. If we were drinking beers.
I was about to mention.
And you threw a Shelby Oak, I would object. Okay, so.
I'd be like, dude, we need to fucking watch something else. Yeah. No, I would say like the sect, at least I can show people like, I don't recommend watching the movie, but you should check out this scene on YouTube and like send them like the weird parts because they're entertaining.
Yes. There's some.
I don't find any part of Shelby Oaks entertaining.
Absolutely fair. Cool. All right, guys, gals, I'm Binary Pals. Thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky.